There we go.
Oh, I got it wrong.
Okay, so we are going to start with our sector spotlight, as I said. So we are welcoming Candace Wu, who is the program manager in pediatric community outreach for Goriab Children's Hospital, part of Atlantic Health, which is a mouthful for sure. So Candace and I actually, we met professionally at a meeting a couple of years ago, right, Candace? Probably like mid-2019. I think it was a North Jersey Health Collaborative meeting. And we said at that meeting, oh, we should work on something together. And then COVID happened, and then I was on leave. And we came back and we ran into each other at another North Jersey Health Collaborative meeting virtually last month. But personally, Candace and I go way, way back. we've known each other since the 80s. Candace is actually, we're cousins. We're excited to run into each other at that meeting. And we've just been talking for the past couple of months professionally as well. And we're excited about, you know, some potential partnership opportunities. So with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Candace. So Candace, all yours. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Alice and I go way back. It was actually really funny that we ran into each other. I was like, hey, I know you. So I'm going to share my screen and hopefully it works because, you know, with technology, when you want it to work, it doesn't.
Technology is great when it works.
Sure is. All right. So just to get us started, I just want to make sure you all can see my screen. Excellent. So we're off to a good start. So that's good. My name is Candace Wu. I am CHES certified, which means I'm a certified health education specialist, and I am the program manager for pediatric community outreach at Goriab Children's Hospital. So just to give a little bit of an overview of what we do with pediatric community outreach, we do the Festival on the Green, the Christmas Festival at the Morris Crown Green, Career Carnival for Kids, Valerie Fund Walk, Healthy Kids Days. We try to be anywhere that is within the Atlantic Health System outreach area, as well as kid-specific. We are looking to create more kid-specific programs. The Festival on the Green is great. It's a big showing. I think I gave out over 1,000 giveaways this year. But it's tough because it's kind of one of those things where people just pass through the tent, take their giveaway and keep going. And it's not really children related, which is something that I'm working really hard on changing, which is why I was so excited to run into Allison, because I feel like we have a great opportunity to work together and really help the kids in the community. Some parent education programs that we've done in the past have to do with mental health, handling tough stuff, food and mood, went to the emergency room, meet the sleep experts. In addition, in the past, we've also done more specific for older teens is helping teens manage going off to college, as well as their parents with how to assist them with mental health issues, how to cope during the pandemic, vape trainings, advocacy, and illness and diseases. The silver lining to COVID basically helped us reach kids on a more personal level because I am a team of one. And it's very difficult to try to reach all the schools and all the kids. So with COVID came Zoom, and that's how we're all able to meet right now. And I've been offering healthcare career webinar for high school students. And this past one I had last week, I had over 140 kids register for. And in those webinars, we talk about the various careers, traditional and non-traditional for high school students, to consider what kind of options that they want, because not everyone needs to go to college, not everyone needs to be a doctor, and there's such a wide range for them. I've also gone into schools in the past, pre-COVID, to talk about vaping. I've talked about what health educators do, public health. I've virtually gone into Morristown High School. I'm actually going to be doing a presentation at Parsippany High School. So working with Madison Chatham Coalition is definitely going to be another step in the right direction to help basically connect Atlantic Health System in our backyard. I know over the years, a lot of things have changed, but we're hoping to bring that back because we know, as everyone on this call knows, it's really important to reach the teens where they are, and they really need the help right now. One resource that I have available that is one of my main responsibilities is teenhealthfx.com. It's a website for teenagers to go for basically unlimited resources. We have this is just like two snapshots of it. What teens can do is ask anonymous questions and we answer them in an unbiased, medically backed response. There's no question that goes unanswered unless it's like a medical diagnosis. And that's when I refer them to see a medical professional. Or if it gets a little too technical, I kind of have to defer to someone else, or I have to kind of ignore it, especially if they're asking very detailed, specific questions. So what does Teen Health Effects offer? We have the general answers of emotional health, sexuality, dating, family, health, fitness, sports and nutrition, alcohol, cigarettes and drugs. And then we also have a 14s by teen section, which I'm hoping that Allison and I can work with the teen task force to really get what teens need right now. The is very outdated.
Or did they start?
Excuse me? Did someone have a question?
I just muted everybody, so I
I wasn't sure someone had a question. So the section is very outdated, and we are hoping to update it with what is important to teens right now. It's one of my main goals to make sure that teens have all the up-to-date resources that they need. In addition to the questions section, we also have hot topics, resource of the month. I record the careers webinar section, so that's also up there as well. And I update it all the time, so it's constantly being updated. As you know, Goriab Children's Hospital is in the same facility as Morristown Medical Center, but it does have its own entrance and it does have its own classification. Here are just some of the infographics available. This is a little outdated. It hasn't been updated to include the Hirsch Center that's at Overlook. But these are just some of the wide range of children's health has to offer. And what ends up happening is a lot of times when we do programs such as the Meet the Sleep Experts that we did in the fall, we used Atlantic Health Systems, Children's Health, Pulmonology, and the Sleep Center doctors and APNs and nurses to do these presentations. So it's a really great resource to connect the community with actual physicians that they can see. I know I kind of went through it kind of fast, but this is my contact information. And what I was hoping to have is more of a conversation or answer any questions that any of you might have based on programs that we might be able to offer or any questions that you might have specifically for me. I feel like that might be more beneficial than me trying to talk for 20 minutes. So I can leave my contact information up. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free to put them in the chat or just come off mute.
Candace, this is Stacey Ewald. Thanks so much. That was a great presentation. Goriab is just a gem of the community, and we're very fortunate to live so close to such a wonderful institution. I wanted to know the Teen Health FX. I'd love to push out that information. In terms of making sure that it's covered, that there's somebody monitoring, what are the hours?
It's just me. So I generally, I'm there every single day, generally 8 to 4. But what ends up happening is it's not a live chat. The question gets submitted through a portal and then it gets answered as they filter through. We don't get as many questions as we used to. So generally the questions are answered within a day or two, depending on how busy life is that time. But for the most part, they're answered very quickly. And we do encourage, if it is like a urgent medical kind of question, that they kind of get help from a doctor or a school counselor or someone that can help them immediately.
Great, thank you.
Do you make a lot of referrals?
In terms of the website or for?
Well, yeah. I mean, if people call and they have questions and then, you know, they need something more than just education, do you make referrals to other programs?
Yes. So fortunately, I don't really get a lot of referrals in terms of being referred to like mental health services and things like that, because we do have the connection to Goriab's behavioral health, and I work closely with them as well. That if I was asked for a specific question for like a crisis center or behavioral health, yes, we absolutely refer them. But we don't really get a lot of those.
Do you get many parents that have questions?
No, we don't actually. It's more so the teens. The only time the parents really have questions is if it kind of gets filters through the school, and then the school reaches out to us to create the programs. So it kind of goes backwards.
Hi, Candace. Thank you so much for that presentation. I think this this partnership is going to be really, really good for certainly for us. And I think that the information from a different angle is going to be really helpful as well. Could you characterize what kind of questions you get? What are they? What is the area where I'm thinking that there are kids who are reaching out or teens who are reaching out who are either embarrassed or don't really feel like, I mean, there's the internet too. So, you know, for some reason they're reaching out, like, I need help with this. I want someone to actually answer this question. Can you characterize what the subject is that you are primarily hearing about?
Sure. So for the most part, it is, I think there's three top categories. The first one is sexuality. The kids always ask, is it normal if, when do I go to the doctor? If, is this normal? What do I do? Those are the number one questions I get asked the most. The second has to do with drugs and alcohol. The most recent question I got asked was if, I can't remember. I could pull it up. It was asked if antibiotics get messed up with antidepressants. I've also been asked if it's okay to use marijuana when you're in antibiotics, or kids ask like general like questions that I guess they're afraid to ask their parents because they don't want their parents to know. And they're also afraid to ask their doctor because for the most part, the parent is in the room with them. So those kind of questions, a lot about drugs, like what, if I smoke marijuana 5 times a day, is that too many times? So questions along those lines.
And are these kids underage? Are they underage?
We don't know how old they are. Since the questions are anonymous, we're not really sure the exact age. To be honest, I know I've been asked questions in the young 20s. Based on, I can tell that the way that they ask the question and the questions that they're asking have to do with older kids. But when it comes to the age, there's no age restriction. And when we answer, we try to keep it in as base information, technical words are like not included. It's as easy to understand as possible.
Thank you.
So what is the duration of your interaction with a person with a question? It's basically, it's posted, you respond to it. Is there any further interaction after you've made if there isn't a referral you can make?
No, there's no additional information because then it comes into legal and all that kinds of stuff. So if a student or if a child asks a question that is pretty severe, we can really only tell them, we strongly recommend you call 911 if it's an emergency, reach out to this crisis center for this, all that kinds of stuff. And we also have a whole section on the website for the resources that are available. Hopefully down the road, we can come up with some kind of youth group program, but we're a little bit of ways away from that.
Do you see certain holes in the services provided to teens that you think should be addressed based on the questions and the education that you do?
Honestly, I don't really see any holes. Prior to working at Atlantic Health System, I was a teacher for 10 years, and it all kind of is the same as I saw in school. It's just generally it's questions that teens don't want to ask out loud. They're embarrassed to say to a teacher or to a parent, or it's just an easy for them to ask a question and get a straight answer without feeling embarrassed or without anyone knowing who it is. There is a big, there's a wide array of school districts doing certain health education and a lot of those things, but that's a whole totally different thing than where we're at.
So
and
how
a lot of what I try to do is to connect parents to resources so they can help their kids. We haven't done a lot of teen programs. This is like the first year I'm really trying to help teens directly. And I think it's not done yet, but hopefully in March, there's gonna be a teen series coming out, but it's not official yet.
So how does an average youth find you? What is the contact information that is available to them that actually gets them to you to ask the question?
They get referred to the website, and then they ask the question through the website, through the portal. So school districts are aware of the website. I've sent it to them in the past. It has, the website has been around for 20 years. It has been revamped since then. We did a whole complete remodel last year. Unfortunately, a lot of school districts block the website because of the content that just has to do with sexual education. When I was a health teacher, and school districts just block websites because they think it's not educational in nature. And school districts that I've worked with directly are working with the schools to unblock them, or kids can just go on their website. But generally, health teachers that I've been in contact with over the last year have the website, and they do encourage their teens to use it instead of Googling and using Wikipedia as a resource.
I just ran into that issue.
Yeah, it's a big problem. They just type it in Google and they pick the first answer that they find.
I'm thinking also we will include the link on our website in our resource section. You know, we'll put it on our homepage as well. Just because, you know, when we have if we're pushing an event or we're pushing an initiative or something and we need RSVPs or we have flyers for something, we always put the flyer on our website and we link back to our website. So just to get more traffic, you know, that could just for our small bubble, it just could raise awareness that way as well. So we'll have that link available.
That sounds great.
Hi, Candace. I just have a quick question. First of all, the teenhealthfx.com sounds great. And I agree. I think it's something that I could see kids in our community using that to ask questions. And so that's great. But I just want to ask just briefly, like, what's the food and mood? I wrote that down when you were showing your thing. Like, what kind of presentation do you do about for that?
So this was a presentation for adults in the community that was done by Community Health, where it was basically a presentation on how certain foods affect your mood. And also that when you, you know, emotional eating and trying to make better choices, and even though it's kind of like that cycle of if you're feeling sad or depressed and then you emotionally eat and then you feel worse because you binged eat, and it kind of just goes in that cycle. It's kind of making a better connection and a relationship with food to make sure you're choosing food that nourishes you versus choosing food that just makes you feel good. Because if you overindulge, think about if you're upset and you eat like 6 cookies and then all of a sudden your stomach hurts and then you feel bad about yourself for eating those cookies, it kind of goes in that cycle that if you can have that better relationship with food, it kind of prevents that from happening. Does that make sense?
I know all about that. let me ask you a question. What kind of audience do you get when you do those programs? Because I find that a lot of programs, you know, the people that really need to be there don't attend, and sometimes we're preaching to the choir.
Yes, that does happen a lot. And fortunately, we are working to record the webinars, get them hosted on Atlantic Health System. On the ones specifically for teens, I've been trying to get uploaded onto teenhealthfx.com because it allows people to view it on their own time. Like, I'm a parent of 2 young kids. I have every intent to go on a live webinar, but life happens and I can't always get on it. So if it's recorded, I can go on my own time. So that's something that Atlantic Health System has been aware of, and we're working really hard to try and get them on the website so people can view them as they, if it's in their schedule. But yeah, it's one of those things that we are not really sure exactly who we're reaching, but it's better to get the information out there than to not try.
Thank you.
I have a question. This is Melissa Tasse, and I know that there was a new law that just got passed. I'm a member of the New Jersey Coalition Against Human Trafficking, and it's mandatory now for schools to have education on human trafficking. So I'm just wondering if you might, through your institution, also as one of your presentations that you deliver about human trafficking.
That is a very strong topic, and it is something that we have not considered yet, but we should. As I said, this is all kind of a work in progress. I'm trying to build up the programs and the things again, but we are also very short staffed because of COVID and everything else that I partner with behavioral health. That is something I can ask them about to see what their feelings are doing a program on that.
You can also reach the coalition directly. I mean, you obviously go through behavioral health, you know, go through your channels, but the coalition actually has like a speakers bureau and a way of delivering presentations. So it's not all on you to like gather all the information and do everything. Just so you know.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it is. It's very, it's interesting how the new laws that keep coming out and how the schools are actually going to implement them is a whole nother beast.
Does anybody else have any questions for Candace or anything else that they want to add? I can also just very briefly talk maybe with Candace and Christine about some of the things that we've talked about. We are, so like Candace said, the Teen Task Force, you know, we have this group of kids that are just doing such amazing things. And they're like our captive audience right now. And they've really just been so helpful in making sure that the things that we're implementing as a coalition are relevant and are appropriate for their peers and their age group. So, you know, we've talked about potentially linking Candace with this group. So right now, and you'll see in the video, in their update video that I'll play in a few minutes, right now they're just so, you know, they're doing so much with Night of Conversation, which the registration launched yesterday. So we're just kind of finishing up those components for Night of Conversation. But our plan with Candace is to invite her to a meeting in the next couple of weeks so that she can meet the Teen Task Force. And we really just want to talk through what the options can be for partnership. So potentially offering some sort of support for teens, either through a group setting or getting them involved on Teen Health FX. You know, there's just a lot of different things that we, you know, amongst our, between MCC, Project Community Pride, and Goryeb, we have the potential to reach a very broad audience, you know, but really to utilize the skills of the Teen Task Force. Christine, do you want to add anything?
Well, just that I think it's going to be a good collaboration to have, you know, Atlantic Health Systems involved in both of our programs. You know, I think I think we're just starting to figure out kind of how we can all work together, but that it's going to be really exciting. And I think it's going to add to all that we have to offer to the community.
And one other thing too, you know, like Candace has said, so many physicians right now are, you know, there are wait lists and, you know, especially when we're talking about adolescence and mental health and eating disorders and things like that. So we also have started to talk maybe potentially about putting some sort of an event together, but not until the spring. But one of the things that we talked about was potentially marketing it as when teens are coming out of their routine, their school year routine, and how to sort of set them up for success for the summer. So they're kind of stepping away from their routines. What, you know, what practices can we put in place? What can we offer to show them that, you know, to get them through those summer months where some risky behaviors are more possible, I guess, than during the school year. So we're definitely, you know, starting to think about ideas for that as well.
I just want to, I think multiple points of contact and are extremely important when you're trying to reach a diverse population like the youth that in our three communities. So having a parallel message that's coming in different directions, I think really helps to make it a lot more meaningful to an individual. And, you know, any way you can reach out and touch a community, I think is just very, very positive and very helpful. So thank you, Candace, for the work you're doing too.
Oh, thank you. I'm very excited to partner and to you know, get this out there for the kids because they really need it.
Awesome. All right. If anyone doesn't have any additional questions, thank you so much, Candace. And I'll share Candace's contact information in our newsletter this week when I share the recording as well. So Candace, you are welcome to stay. But if you have to leave, that's okay too. Whatever works with your schedule.
No, thank you so much for having me. I'm definitely going to try to stay on to hear all the good things that you all are doing.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you very much.
All right. I am going to move us on to the Teen Task Force video update. So it's just a couple of minutes long, and then we'll talk about Night of Conversation as well. So let me go ahead, share my screen. Oh, are you kidding? Oh, no. And 1 second.
Technology is great when it works.
This is what I get for trying to switch over to my Mac for this meeting.
I'm gonna get a cup of coffee.
Oh no. Sorry, everybody. Just give me 1 second. And if this doesn't work, I'll just tell you what the update was. Okay. Let's see if this works.
Hi, my name's Emma. I am a member of the Teen Task Force. I've done a video once before, but I am relatively new here, and I just wanted to update you guys on our meeting last week, which ended up being very productive and very fun. We all enjoyed talking about the Night of Conversation and our next steps in our creation of the boxes. I took over planning them, and I planned out different candy or popcorn to go along with our Night of Conversation so that we can get families warmed up in order to get them to speak to their children about difficult topics. We are also working on a Prezi, which is a kind of virtual presentation for people to go at their own pace through for the boxes. And we really made some great strides. It's almost finished. We're just on our final steps. And then we also are planning out the listening session, getting kids involved, starting to put out some flyers and offer gift cards or community service hours for anyone who wants to participate and be able to speak about the experiences they've had in Chatham and Madison. And then lastly, our biggest step and my personal favorite is creating a TikTok account so that we can make some videos of us at the Teen Task Force and the MCC and make some videos about what we do, what we plan on putting out, just get the word spread and also show some ideas about how teenagers can choose other activities and hobbies. And we're gonna use it for many things, but mostly to get some ideas out about the Night of Conversation and the listening sessions and encourage students to just follow along on our journey throughout this process. So that's basically what we talked about for our meeting. And I hope to see you guys again soon.
So Emma is so funny. She's like our innovator. She always has, like, she kind of waits until the last minute of a meeting and then she has this fantastic idea. And then we just prolong our meeting always, just talking about how good her idea was. So we, the Teen Task Force, I mean, Christine and I have been meeting with them weekly for the past, I don't know, month and a half, maybe, you know, just their efforts for Night of Conversation have just been so amazing. So I want to show you, hopefully you can see, we have our little mock-up box for Night of Conversation. So this is, I know it's kind of hard to see, probably not upside down is a good idea. So Christine and I put this little mock box together yesterday. So when you open the box up, there's going to be a label with a QR code that's going to link to the Prezi that Emma was talking about. And for anyone that's done a Prezi before, it's like Emma said, it's interactive. It's going to walk parents through every step of the evening. So in addition to that, which will be here, a label stuck on the inside of the box, there's also some other stuff. So we have different resources, different MCC and Project Community Pride resources. We have our conversation starters. We have our RAC cards. We have our substance abuse resource card, our directory, mental health directory as well. We have information about the Teen Task Force. Then we have some cute little, we have Hershey Kisses in a little bag. We have some popcorn. We also have popsicle sticks that have different icebreakers on them. So that would be the first step, is to go through the icebreakers, sort of get the conversation started with fun, you know, fun things like that. We have a couple of little MCC and Project Community Pride giveaways in there, a stress ball, a little pop-it thing. And then we have our questions. So really this is intended to be sort of like a game. Put that down. So our questions have, we have five different questions, or no, we have seven questions with follow-up questions as well. And there's also included on the card is in a little pink bubble, it's sort of a game of who asks the question first or who answers the question first. There's different topics, self-care, stress and anxiety, substance use. So those questions obviously are included as well. And we really wanted to be mindful about sort of appealing to different learning styles. We have the Prezi that will show each question sort of as you go. It'll be on a screen. Families can broadcast it to their TV through Bluetooth. But then you also have the questions in front of you for somebody, you know, that wants to be able to see it right in front of them. In addition to that, we have coupons for restaurants. So Christine was able to get the shop in Chatham to participate and give us a coupon for families to bring into the restaurant to place their order, and Firehouse in Madison as well. And we're waiting for two more restaurants to get back to us. So we also have those coupons in the boxes. So the idea is, you know, you can order dinner in, have it delivered to you, or go pick it up. The way that our registration is working is through an Eventbrite link. So it's a little bit fickle with Eventbrite. You have to, there has to be a date attached to the event. But for this event, registration opened yesterday. We're running registration all the way through the end of March. But when you go to register your family, when you go to Eventbrite, you have to pick a date in March. So you can register any date March 1st through March 31st. You select that date. I'll get the confirmation email that you registered. I will email you back and we'll designate a time that a volunteer will drop the box right on your front steps in an MCC tote bag. So protected from the elements. And you basically, once you've registered, you do it at your own pace. We are asking that families take a photo when they are playing the game, having the conversation and posting it on social media. There's instructions that the girls include in their Prezi video. And then once they do that, they'll be entered into a raffle for a prize. But, you know, we've said this before, the intent with this initiative is really, it's always been for families to just start to have this conversation. You know, we've been doing this initiative for 4 years now. We just want families to talk. And the Teen Task Force was so great about their input with the questions and were so specific. And, you know, they were very adamant that we added more mental health related questions. So we did that. And, you know, we hope that we're able to reach a very broad audience. We have 50, our registration is capped at 50. And that's just based on the amount of money that we have budgeted for this. We'd love to get 50 families. We have two families registered so far. So, you know, we're just pushing it to as many people as possible. So we're also working very closely with the Y marketing team on this, because it's a joint initiative between MCC, PCP, and the Y. So we really just want to push it to as many families as possible. And the Teen Task Force, they really, you know, and Christine can say too, they've just done such an amazing job. We've been meeting until 9:30 at night. We're just doing everything. They're doing everything that they can to be available for this and to just make it their own. So we're so proud of all of their efforts. Does anybody have any questions that I can answer about Night of Conversation, or Christine, if you have anything else that you want to add? Does anybody have any questions?
I think I would just add that I think this is a great thing that's you know, happening with the box being dropped off at the family's house, and that, you know, school counselors who are online right now, I mean, let's push this out if we can to families. And it's just really getting, you know, parents and kids to, you know, have a conversation about lots of things. And this year we did add some mental health issue questions, and the Teen Task Force was very helpful, because some of the questions they were like, nah, that's not a good one to ask. So we had to like kind of negotiate, but I, you know, we're really hoping that we get some good feedback about this, because I think that this will be a useful tool to use, you know, even for next year, or maybe we'll tweak it a little bit, but I think it's just a great, I mean, we used to meet at the Y and, you know, and then we moved to having to do, you know, virtual because of COVID. And now this is just such a great, I think just a great idea. Also so comfortable to do it at home with your kids. I'm just really excited for it to happen. So.
Allison, what's the best way to advertise it? Do you have a flyer? Right. Is it on a website?
Yeah. So I will, I was going to share the flyer real quick. So we are going to do targeted pushes in for our MailChimps. So we always ask that people are sharing that way. I believe the Y is doing a targeted push for families with children ages 12 to 18, or I think we lowered it. I think we said actually 11 to 18. We're pushing it to Reverend Marquet, who will share it with the Interfaith Council for Chatham as well. But we, you know, we'll share the flyer with you all. We'll have it tonight at your at the course consortium event as well, that families can register on the spot. But if you all have schools in particular, Vanessa, Alex, and Heather, if you have any other ideas on ways that we can push this out to, you know, to get as many families registered as possible, please let us know, aside from just sharing the flyers with you all.
Thank you.
Are you doing the Interfaith Council of Madison as well, or is Madison combined with Chatham?
They are separate. I will also share it with Reverend Dunn, who's been our contact for the Madison Interfaith. So we'll share it with him as well. I don't think they are combined. They're separate.
I don't think so either.
And then Stacy and Len, we can share the flyer with you both as well. If there's a way to, or with the media person, I know for Chatham Township, if there's a way that we can get it on the websites there, or if there's any other suggestions that you guys have.
Yeah, no, that would be good. And we also in the borough do constant contact. So mm-hmm. we're able to touch people, those that sign up, and we've got about 1,200 that are signed up.
Great.
How about the recreation departments?
That's a good idea as well. So that would be Carol. And I don't know if Zach Ellis is still in Madison for recreation.
I don't know.
I can look into that as well. That's another good one. Thank you. All right. If anybody doesn't have any other questions or anything about Night of Conversation, like I said, the link is live. We're doing, I think our MailChimp campaign goes out tomorrow specific to Night of Conversation. And we'll also, we're checking in with the Y weekly just to see where our registration numbers are. The nice thing about that this too is that the registration is open, but it's going to go all the way through March 31st. So families really can participate whenever works for them. Okay, I'm going to move up. Sorry, did somebody have something else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Allison, I would just suggest that because there's so much autonomy in this, that the idea of asking families to take a picture of them or post some sort of post-event content makes it, it forces them to anchor at some place in time. And so I would heavily emphasize that once you've received the box within X number of days, please upload XYZ, because that increases the level of commitment. But I also, as I wrote in the chat, it gives the families the flexibility to divide it up over a couple of different days if they want to, and to go back to it at a later point in time because the box is going to be theirs. So all of that stuff is wonderful. Thank you.
I would also suggest, as you were talking, I kept thinking, my kids are older, but I kept thinking, how would I have gotten them to sit down to actually do this? And occasionally, once upon a time at the high school, probably the middle school too, they would give credit. So I know you only have 50 boxes, but you know, if you do this with the boxes and then want the conversation to take place anyway, it could be through the health class, you know, maybe they get to waive a homework or some kind of credit, you know, I would say through health, but that might incent the kids to make sure it happens.
That's a great idea. I think also the idea behind the, like, it really started out as a game idea. You know, we wanted it to really feel like a board game or something like that. The nice thing about this too is we can create additional decks of cards for people for different stages as well, sort of as they go in, as kids go into summer or as they transition back into the school year. There's so many different topics that we can create decks of cards specific to. So, you know, we want to keep that in mind as well. The other thing I forgot to mention is we also want to do a touch point in the middle of March. So we're going to offer March 15th, 16th, depending on what the day of the week it is, just offer an opportunity for parents to log on to a Zoom session to talk about if they've done it so far, what their concerns are, what their challenges might be, just to have a forum for people to come in and talk, you know, about what they're experiencing or what their challenges are, and then potentially do something at the end of the month as well, sort of like a culmination event, not event, but some sort of culminating activity. So, you know, we want to have those touch points with families, and then also obviously an evaluation at the very end to see what families got out of it. There is a little bit of an evaluation built in to the last question, just sort of a reflective what they've learned through this, you know, through this game. So I forgot, I wanted to mention that as well. All right, so I will move us on to our MCC Action Plan Task Force. So if you all remember from our January meeting, we had some great ideas coming out of that meeting. We were really focused on finishing up our action plan for our competing continuation grant. And we had such great momentum. And I threw out there that if anybody was interested in keeping the work going and staying on to talk about some more new initiatives for our action plan, to email me. So we had a great group help out and be part of that action plan task force. And we had some really good ideas come from it. So we met a couple of weeks ago and we talked through all of our goals. So our capacity building goal for as the coalition, and also our goal to reduce substance use amongst teens. So we focused on, in particular, we focused on the idea that Sue had at our January meeting, this Draw the Line campaign, which is really focused on making parents aware of the alcohol that's in their homes. So really to focus on the level in particular, we had, you know, we talked through what the challenges of a campaign like that might be. One of our members, John, you know, he threw out there, well, you know, if a parent is drawing with a Sharpie marker on their bottle of vodka to monitor the level, well, what happens when a kid just pours water in and it, you know, makes the level look the same? I think the response there is at least kids are noticing that parents are aware that they're monitoring that, and maybe they hadn't been aware in the past. So with this Draw the Line campaign, it's really, you know, we got a lot of feedback in our the key informant interviews that I've done, and I'll talk about this later. Kids are getting their alcohol from parents, but parents are not aware that it's happening. So we want to be mindful of that. We want to create something, a campaign that addresses that local condition. Melissa, I see your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yes. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I heard a great trick to this is, so what you do is you take your bottle and you turn it upside down and you draw your Sharpie line on the bottle upside down. And as long as the kids don't learn that this is what you're doing, right? And then you turn the bottle back over, the line isn't at like the level of the alcohol, right? And so that's one way to sort of kind of try to trick them until they figure this hack out, I guess.
It's a good tip. That's a really good tip. And, you know, if teens aren't aware that parents are even paying attention to it to begin with, this could just be a great initial step. We were talking about this campaign sort of as we were getting ready to launch Sticker Shock with Mac. And we just, you know, it's such a good opportunity for us to build on our relationship that we have with these liquor stores in Madison and Chatham. One of the ideas that John had was to try and do some sort of branded little mini Sharpie to write, you know, put our logo on it, put Draw the Line campaign on it, to have them available for customers to take. And then obviously, of course, to have information as well for parents, really targeting parents on this campaign. So we wanted to try and get something for Sticker Shock, but Sticker Shock was last week and we only had a couple of weeks to turn it around. So we are going to start working on this, and we are definitely going to be, we're going to focus on this for our spring campaign. Sticker Shock campaign. So we'll kind of do it sort of right at the same time. So that is the goal. That's the goal with Draw the Line. We also talked about other spring alcohol prevention campaign planning. One of the things that we've talked about doing for a long time is really working with the local florists, tuxedo rental shops, salons as well, to really do something targeted to prom, graduation, all of that. So we're still building that idea out as well. But we also talked about capacity building in groups that we're not reaching the community that we'd like to reach. So, you know, it was just a very productive meeting. We had great input from everybody that was involved, and we kind of all thought, well, this is a good group, you know, to keep going forward. So, you know, we're going to hopefully keep that group going. And, you know, start implementing these campaigns that we came up with. Len and Sue, do you guys have anything that you want to add to that recap from that meeting?
No, I think that was a good recap. It's, you know, exactly what we discussed. It was a good meeting. And, you know, that outreach has to go on. And I think, you know, those that we approach will be very willing.
All right.
Bame, I think you covered everything.
Thanks. Thank you both. Okay. Just going to do a couple of, actually, before I go on, I'm going to stop our sectors that we have right now on the call. Does anybody have anything that they want to share? Any updates from their particular sector? We can go around and just hear from all of you.
Nothing
not here. All at once. Julie?
Hi, good morning. I'm Julie Reich from the Chatham Senior Center. It's nice to be part of this meeting. I just want to remind everyone that the center has been up and running throughout COVID. We are not a Chatham center. We are a standalone nonprofit, so we have folks from six different counties. Madison no longer, well, right now does not have a senior center. So we have had a lot of the seniors come to us, and we've had a lot of grants that we've written to cover counseling. So we have a number of support groups that are going on for anybody that's 60 and older that are run by clinical licensed social workers, and they are free. So if you have know of anybody or just somebody needs to have some connection, just send them our way.
Thanks, Julie.
That's, I'm sure that the Chatham group that focuses on, you know, drug abuse across all age groups, I'm sure they know about that.
Sure.
Are they still actively addressing adult issues with drugs?
So you're talking about the Municipal Alliance?
Yeah, right.
Yes. I mean, they have in the past, you know, very much funded programs for us to bring these types of programming to the center. So we are part of that as well.
Okay. Is Julie. Madison's Alliance still active?
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
Julie, I'm wondering if we can add something to our newsletter that goes out on Thursdays each week as well. You know,
sure.
If anything that you have, flyers or anything like that, we can just start adding that to, you know, so that, because we have people of all, you know, all age ranges that receive that newsletter. So events that you have, speakers, yep. Just general information about the center as well. Just send that over to me and I'll start including it in our newsletter.
Great. I will do that. Thank you.
Yep. My update kind of tangentially related in that, you know, family stress translates to the kid stress. Chatham Township, the new affordable housing unit on Southern Boulevard, 24 units. The applications have opened up for folks who would like to potentially have an opportunity to move into that facility. So it's our first affordable housing complex in over 30 years and the first rental that I'm aware of. So, you know, again, especially post-pandemic and families are impacted in different ways. So I think that'd be worthwhile to push out.
Does anybody have any other updates from any other sectors that we have?
None here.
Well, actually, Lynn, last night at the council meeting, when you were reporting on the people who are using the food use at the food pantry on Wednesdays, and yes. You had mentioned something that a lot more of the people coming through were seniors. And yes. I think when we talk about stresses that having food anxiety and financial stress are really important factors. And I think
yes.
that we have to look at how that impacts. I mean, that's not particularly our focus for the senior group, but since Julie mentioned it, I thought that it's worth noting and being aware of.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Rosella. One of the things that the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee is working on, along with the Interfaith Council, along with Mayor's Wellness, along with the Senior Center, is trying to identify seniors who are just plain isolated and lonely, and seeing if we can't come up with a program of visitation which requires quite a bit of planning and training, et cetera. An idea would be, number one, obviously, to grant some kind of companionship to that person, and all, and also working with the police, by the way, because they have this operation Reassure where they will call you if you sign up to make sure that you're okay. I signed up because I'm single and live here alone, and I have balance issues. So, you know, I want to make sure that they remove my body in a timely fashion. But I think it's important to do that because even though COVID seems to be winding down, the fact that people have been isolated for almost 3 years now, that isolation is very hard to break as you get older. You know, my father always used to tell me, wait till you get older, you'll see what I mean. And I know exactly what he means. We become creatures of routine. Change scares the bejesus out of us. We don't like to do things that involve change. And so we're trying to make a difference because I know, you know, certain people who've become widows who are now alone. And, you know, we see an increasing number of seniors coming to the food distribution because inflation just eats away at the Social Security check. So thanks for bringing that up, Rosella, because I think it's an important program that we need to get off the ground.
And the youth connection might be that those people who are isolated and need some sort of a connection to connect a youth that is struggling with isolation issues or anxiety issues with somebody else, I think is meaningful.
Yeah, and that's topic number one, believe it or not, for our Senior Citizen Advisory Committee meeting this coming Thursday at 2 p.m. And you're welcome to join in if you'd like. I'll send you the Zoom details. But one of the things, do you know Judy Lean?
She's wonderful, and she works in the library.
Yes, so she came up with the idea of seniors and technology and pairing a senior with a high school Key Club student to teach them technology so that they can at least navigate that and feel comfortable even in using Zoom to just have a facial connection with someone. So that's one of the topics that we're discussing. I'll send you the Zoom link.
The sector has a program like that that we have done pre-COVID. So that would be a logical place for us to help you get Key Club kids. It'll be different because they'll be going into people's homes. I also just want to remind you that we have social workers on staff to help make assessments, referrals, et cetera. So if there's somebody that you're concerned about or, you know, pride feeds a lot here, that it's very hard that we could have this idea that we're gonna go out and help, but people might not want that help or have a lot of reasons not to have that. But feel free to call the center.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Pride plays a big part. We also have to discuss it with the families of those seniors. And one of the reasons for the training and going through things that the Mayor's Wellness Committee does is that there may be some psychological issues with the person, mental health like Alzheimer's or depression, that if you go with two people, one person can be having a conversation, but the other one can be observing that, you know, there's a problem here that needs more than just companionship. And that's kind of one of the purposes of this. So it may take a little time, but I really want to get this done. I think it's very, very important.
And then bringing it back to the youth, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the last 3 years with many young people that are stuck in homes that have been dysfunctional, that same type of observation would really be useful just to see what, I mean, we're looking at increased suicide rates right now among the youth group. And I think that's the youth population and being related to COVID isolation and things like that. I think those are things that we really need to have on our radar and be aware of.
Yeah, I'm working with the VA hospital out of East Orange. They have a LGBTQ veterans suicide program that they're extending to beyond LGBTQ because veterans are veterans. And it's incredible that nationwide of those that take their lives, 21% are veterans. And of all veterans, 11% are homeless, which to me is just disgraceful. Both of those stats. So we're looking to help in some way.
Thank you, Len and Rosella. And if you have, if you want to include the information in the chat, we can get that out as well.
Sure.
Okay. Any other sectors have anything that they want to share before we just give a quick recap of what's gone on this past month? Okay, so Sticker Shock ran last week. We had volunteers for 3 different days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We hit 3 liquor stores in Chatham. Madison was unable, there was a family emergency with the person who does Sticker Shock in Madison with the softball team. So we will work with them for the summer Sticker Shock. But in Chatham, we had Hickory Wine Cellars, Bottle King, and Cottage Deli all participate. USA Wine Traders did not want volunteers coming in this year. So we dropped stickers to them and they had their volunteers. We have to follow up with them to make sure that they actually did participate, but they did not want volunteers in the store this year. So we placed over 1500 stickers this year. We actually went through a lot. We went through more stickers than we usually go through. People were fast in placing the stickers. So that was great. We had good sector representation, parents, government, teen, youth from MAC as well. So we're working on that press release probably next week. So it would hit the following week. So that's great for Sticker Shock. One other update, a couple more updates for MCC. Thank you to everybody that was able to fill out their coalition involvement agreement and get it back to us. We, you know, for those of you that were able to print them out, or if we delivered them and then we're able to pick them up, we're just waiting on two more, and we should be getting those back this week. So if we reached out to you, thank you. If we didn't reach out to you, thank you anyway, but we got what we needed. We're good there. The NOFO, the Notice of Funding Opportunity, was released for the competing continuation grant, our grant that we received from the DFC. That was released last Wednesday, February 9th. It's funny. I was on a CDC webinar on Friday of last, or two Fridays ago, and they just announced that it was going to be released the following week. We weren't expecting it until the middle of March, which is not ideal that it came out so quickly, but so we have 60 days from February 9th to get everything done. We have our action plan done, you know, thanks to all of your help. We have our CIAs pretty much done. Next steps are gonna be working on the budget, which the board will help to approve that. We don't really change our budget that much year over year. And then it's working on our project narrative. And part of our project, a good chunk of our project narrative comes from the data that we've, the qualitative data that we've collected over the past 2 months. So we'll be working closely with Epiphany on writing this application, and also with the Y. The Y will provide support, making sure that our application looks good and ready to go for the April 11th. We want to get it in ahead of that April 11th deadline, of course. So that's really going to be the admin focus for the next month and a half. In addition to that, because the CDC always does it this way, we have our first progress report of the year is due in 2 weeks, two Fridays. So I've talked about this progress report before. Every action that MCC takes as a coalition, we have to input into a system. And then Epiphany, our contracted evaluator, creates an evaluation report, and then we basically put that into a format for the CDC. And then that gets compiled with all the other 720 coalitions in the country. So we're working on that as well. So that's due in a couple of weeks. So like I said, they always put everything out at the same time. So working on that. We also are working on a couple of presentations. So we are, thanks to Candace's help, we're working on getting a speaker for our, we're trying to work on a lunch and learn series for MCC. So targeting different sectors. So our first presentation is gonna focus on alcohol in the teenage brain. We're working with a crisis clinician from Atlantic Health to get that presentation, a virtual presentation on the calendar for sometime in March. And then we are also working in April. We're working with a lot of you know Pat Awesome. She's she works for Partnership to End Addiction. She's spoken at Chatham Consortium events in the past. She's fantastic. She's also in private practice in Morristown. So we're working with Pat on a presentation that focuses on marijuana and alcohol and how those two substances work together negatively when driving is involved. She wrote an article. She's written several articles in the past couple of months that focus on that topic. So we want to present that information to parents and other sectors as well. So that will be in April. We're just finalizing dates, staying away from holiday breaks and things like that. And her presentation will most likely be in the evening because we want to gear that one towards parents. But the other one will be the alcohol presentation most likely will be in the afternoon. So as soon as we finalize that information, I will share all of that. Chatham Consortium event tonight is focused on the college admissions process and what all that entails. I don't know if anyone from schools is still on that can talk about that presentation, but Audra Tenero is the speaker tonight and she's amazing. We did a podcast episode with her a couple of years ago where she talked about similar content for that. MCC will have a table tonight as well with some resources for families. We're so excited. Thanks to Heather for helping us have a table tonight. We're going to have lots of resources for parents. It's going to be so great to be there, you know, in person and to have resources available.
And Heather, I'll be jumping in.
Sorry, Christine. Yes.
Squeezing a spot on the table. Yeah.
Yes. Christine and Project Community Pride will be there as well. So we'll have a night of conversation kit to show off. We'll also be pushing our community survey and our listening session, which is my last update. So we are set. We have a listening session, a youth listening session scheduled for March 1st at 7 p.m. It's a virtual listening session. I have a flyer that we're going to share in the newsletter this week. You can, anyone 12 to 17 years old, Chatham, Madison, that wants to participate will get one volunteer service hour for participating as well as a Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks gift card. We're going to have a conversation. Kelly from Epiphany and her staff will facilitate the listening session, but basically we're looking for information about teens and substance use, just teens and prevention and general information about what it's like growing up in Madison and Chatham. And all of this data helps to really, make our project narrative very rich. We have quantitative data. We have the student survey from Chatham this past May, but that's quantitative. We want that rich qualitative data, where we can have a conversation and learn more about what teens are going through, so that we can triangulate what we're hearing in the student survey. So we'll share that. I know Christine has already shared it with her families. We have the competitive teams at the Y have shared it as well. So we're hoping, we'd love to get 20 teens. I think we have 4 right now, but we'll do breakout rooms as well. So we don't want more than 10 teens in one breakout room to have that conversation. 10 is our max. So I will share that in the newsletter as well. I think that's it for my updates. Does anybody have anything else that they want to add before I keep talking and go into our qualitative data review?
I have one quick thing on sticker shock. When you mentioned doing Madison in the summer, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's possible if you could move it up to maybe prior to prom when everybody's mm-hmm. buying a lot of alcohol. Might be nice if you can.
That's a great suggestion. Yeah, it would be nice actually to stagger Madison and Chatham anyway. So we've done it. I think we've done it once or twice before Memorial Day. And then we moved it to 4th of July, not too long ago. So, we're not set on those dates. So that's a great suggestion. We'll definitely do that.
I just have a quick question about the, alcohol substance abuse with the introduction of all of these hard ciders and things like that. Is there anything in particular that we're doing to change the strategy? Because there's a lot of, this stuff is readily available and it looks like you're drinking juice, but it's got an alcoholic content.
So when we do sticker shock, we do put, we don't just do beer anymore. We, any like hard ciders, seltzers, things like that. We kind of hit all of those, anything that has a area that we can place the sticker on at this point, we do. So aside from that, I don't think that we do anything that focuses on the substance, on what type of alcohol it is in particular, but it's something that we can look into for sure.
I'm just thinking that it's one thing, because I think adults are much more used to doing mixed drinks. So drawing the line on a bottle of spirits, whatever, you know, whichever it is, you know, might be something that's going to, but I don't think that the youth are as much interested in the mixed drinks as they are in these things that are marketed as cool. And I just know from my, within my own family, I see a lot more, you know, thinking, well, this is okay. It's, you know, it doesn't have that much alcohol in it. It's more like drinking apple cider.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. Just to add, it's almost like the gummies with the THC where they look like candy, and it's really,
oh yes.
There's so many awful mixed messages. Yeah.
This is, something for down the road, but I know when my daughter went to Australia to study abroad, they have a different, and Allison, I don't know if they had this when you had gone, but they had a different metric for indicating how much alcohol was in anything that you touched. So it was comparable across drinks. And I cannot remember for the life of me what it was called, but she said it was so much easier because if you had it, you know, a large can of beer, and it might say it was 3 units. And if you had a spiked seltzer, it might say it was 2 units, but you understood, you know, the comparison across the spectrum of alcohol. So it might be good at some point to have an education campaign. You know, of course we don't want kids from 12 to 17 drinking, but you know, kids are going to do what they're going to do. So at least if they're informed and they understand, you know, what's in the alcohol.
Yeah, some sort of infographic maybe that shows what the, like, just an easier way to understand the content of alcohol in each beverage. I sort of remember that in Australia. I think the lifestyle is just so different too. I think it's like, you know, I not because I was partaking, but you know, as a student, as a college student studying abroad in Australia, alcohol is, there were so many different forms of alcohol. There's just, it's a very different lifestyle, I think. So it was a little bit jarring at times just to see like all the different types of alcohol that there were. So that probably would have been, that's probably a helpful tool for somebody that's sort of unaware all the different things that exist. But yeah, that's a good point, Stacey. That's something that we can look into for sure. Obviously we like infographics, as you can see here. It's just something that's very, we've learned it's easy for people to comprehend and just look at quickly. So this is gonna be on our website. It's probably a little bit difficult. You don't need to read everything. I'll go through it. But so this is our theme analysis. So I'm just gonna zoom in. So our qualitative data theme analysis, we over December, January, and some of February, actually, we completed 11, it's actually 12, we had one more key informant interview. So we were able to represent a lot of different sectors, schools, law enforcement, parents, youth, faith-based, local government, youth serving, and health as well. So all those sectors. So our interviews were anywhere from 1 to 2 hours. We had one actually that went even over 2 hours. And, you know, we start with our problem statement. So just like we do with a logic model, the problem statement is that youth in Madison and Chatham consume alcohol and use marijuana. Across the board, the most widely used substances, this was the order that most people responded, alcohol, marijuana, and then vaping. Vaping is the vehicle though, for nicotine. So we asked questions about protective and risk factors. So protective factors are things that essentially protect against substance use, and risk factors are the things that contribute to. So, you know, that first one, strong peer relationships, that can work both ways. You know, we heard from people that, you know, those strong friendships can protect against substance use, but also there's that peer pressure component as well, which can also unfortunately contribute to substance use. We heard for other protective factors, you know, there's such great youth groups in Madison and Chatham, very strong athletic involvement, college goals, you know, kids are very, and families are focused on college acceptances. So that's been a driving, force for staying away from illegal substances. And then also, you know, one thing that I didn't list here, but we had people say were the student assistance counselors, Project Community Pride, there are the municipal alliances. There's so many resources available to families in Madison and Chatham. You know, we're very lucky that we have all of these resources available. With risk factors, we heard boredom a lot. You know, there isn't much to do, you know, so that could be a risk factor. Stress and anxiety, a huge risk factor. Lack of family rules or consequences or just structure around expectations around substance use is big as well. And as I said before, the peer relationships. We asked a lot of questions about access. So where or how are teens accessing these substances? Number one answer was older peers. We had somebody say, which I had never heard before, we had somebody respond that high school athletics in particular, if you have kids that age out of the program and then come back, hang out with their old teammates, that's an access point. Older siblings as well, that was number two. And then parents without their knowledge, and then parents with their knowledge. So those were the other two most popular responses. We did not hear fake IDs. And remember, we're focused on 12 to 17 year olds. After 17, yeah, fake IDs, once they go to college, that could be, you know, coming into play. But for our specific age range, we did not hear that. We also didn't hear that liquor stores are providing to minors. We did not hear that. And we would hear that from law enforcement if it was an issue. I included this quote, underage alcohol use seems to be very low on the priority list of the parents that we talk to. I thought that was a very telling quote. I wanted to include that. So then we move into consequences and general themes. So 23% of respondents believe that consequences for underage drinking are clearly defined by parents. So very low percentage there. 50% believe that consequences are clearly defined by law enforcement, and 91% believe that that consequences are clearly defined by schools. So most people did respond that there are clear expectations set forth by schools. They share that information with parents. They share it with students. It's known. So I think that's a good statistic. And then when we look at our general themes, over half of the respondents believe that stress and anxiety are the leading driver for substance use. So that's that risk factor. 91% of people that we interviewed believe that it's very acceptable for teens to consume alcohol. So, you know, a theme that came up a lot in these interviews is drinking culture in Madison and Chatham. There's a culture that, you know, is sort of an unspoken thing. 63% believe, and I thought this was an interesting one, believe that marijuana is easier for teens to access than alcohol. And then 75% believe that there has been a decrease in teen substance use in the past 2 years. So,
Allison, I'd just like to go back to that 91%.
Sure.
Because I think when you look at the fact that it's that family use, and particularly in the economic strata that we find in Chatham and Madison, I think that is very, very telling, because we may be concerned about youth 12 to 17, but it is obvious that families are not that much concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And that they basically think that, you know, it's okay if it's my child in my own house. And we see that attitude going across the whole anti-mask movement and things like that. I'll do what I want with my own body. It's my child. Don't tell me what to do. And I really think that that's a very telling statistic.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, there were conversations that I had with people in particular to that specific point about consequences consequences with parents, that it's, you know, it's hard to, all these questions can be hard to answer, right? But that one in particular, for some families, the feeling is that they're not consequences aren't clearly defined because it's a non-issue. It's not an issue until it's an issue, right? So, so that's, you know, it's difficult to quantify that, you know, for somebody to be able to answer that question. But, you know, it's also interesting to hear from so many people that the other things that parents are concerned about, and I think even that's shifted in the past 6 months, that, and we've heard this, you know, Christine McIntyre and I had a meeting with somebody yesterday who's a coach. And, you know, just the mental health piece, and so many things just around that, it's just changed how, what her interaction as a coach is like with her teens. And these things are just, it's so rapidly evolving. So it's, you know, the mental health piece, it's going to take a long time, obviously, for us to learn all of the effects that this has and how we have to change our course, our prevention course, to meet those needs. So, you know, this is like a top level, you know, but these were themes that we saw, that I saw over and over again in these interviews. You know, we were pleased to get the number of people to participate that did. I think, you know, we're going to be able to, we won't, but you know, it'll be interesting to include the youth listening session data in our project narrative and just sort of see where that all fits in. To me, that feels like the data point that's missing right now and will really help to just pull everything together for us, you know, to hear from teens themselves. I was saying in a meeting last week, we've had two different groups of kids participate in the teen task force, and the group prior, I don't know if Kiana is still on here, but maybe Kiana and I were talking about it. The kids that we've had in the past were very, you know, we talked about substance use and their peers all the time. They were very open to sharing things. And, you know, it was like every meeting that we had was a listening session almost. This group that we have right now, we don't talk about it. They are much more focused on their goals and what, you know, what things, you know, what initiatives they're working on and kind of head down moving forward. But it's so interesting how, and I think that that's a result of the, you know, there were, it was two different times, two different, you know, lives basically that we've been living. And it's just very interesting to see how different their experiences are and our experience with these groups. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of the listening session and seeing how we can input it into our project narrative. Does anybody have any questions about the, I'm going to stop sharing, about our key informant interviews or anything else that they want to add?
I just want to just say how much it highlights that, you know, the joining together of mental health and substance use prevention is that, you know, that the stress and anxiety, you know, and the use of drugs and alcohol, really, there is such a connection that, so it's interesting that, you know, that that's really kind of what's happening now and that we really need to, I'm glad that we're working more closely with MCC as well, because I feel like that's kind of what we're seeing is that, so I just wanted to make that comment.
I just wanted to comment on the things that help versus the things that harm and how it's sometimes the same. The peer pressure can be good and the peer pressure can be bad. Right. And with the athletics, I have often heard, well, in the off season, we party because when we're playing football, we can't. So I'm not sure. Sometimes I go, I don't know that it's helping the sports. And they also have, when you mentioned the different ages, one of the problems I had with sports is you can have seniors with freshmen and then they're all friends and then they're all partying. And now you have a freshman at senior parties. And that gets very dicey too. So I view the athletics it pretty much the same statement, like they are very helpful in keeping them busy and active and physically healthy. But then the mental health challenges, the peer pressure and the drinking, it's like an equally negative effect. So I always think to myself, I don't know if they're good or bad. It's both.
Right. That's true.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing. And I was thinking also that what happens when you have that camaraderie that develops over a team when they're not playing. that, you know, I think that that becomes, that's a very important point that, that Sue brought up, and I would actually put them in both columns.
Yeah. And for some kids, they don't have that, you know, that serves as such a positive factor, because a protective factor, because they don't have that, that sense of community somewhere else. So it, you know, it's hard, you know, there's always going to be pros and cons, but I hadn't heard that with the as an access point before. I thought that was very interesting. So I wanted to make sure that, I mean, I was a freshman playing on a varsity team. So at Chatham, and I had peers that were, you know, seniors, and I'll never forget a softball game that we had in Mendham the day after junior prom, and somebody getting sick on the bus, and my coach saying, get it together. It's a sectional game, you know, you're going to go play second base. So, and for me as a freshman to see that, that's obviously, however many years later, that's stuck with me. And I, you know, so anyway. All right. If anybody doesn't have anything else to add, I have 10:59. So I'm going to shut it down before we hit 11 o'clock. Our next meeting is March 15th. I think it's March 15th. Is that right? Because it's the 15th of February. Yeah, March 15th. So working on a sector spotlight for that month as well, hopefully an educational component for that meeting. But look out for everything in our newsletter that we reviewed today. Thank you all for joining us, and I'll see everybody soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you.